Well, right now it is time for us to bring in the Lakeville Journal. It is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal, where we're joined by Cynthia Hoswinder and Janet Manco, and we take a look at some of the stories in the paper. Good morning, Janet, and good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning.
Nice to have you folks along with us on this day where it kind of makes what happened yesterday in our country, brings us down a couple of notches to realize that there's been an expression that's always talked about our Constitution and about our form of democracy. It's kind of like making sausage. It's a very ugly process that looks horrible, but when it's all said and done, it actually turns out to be something that is well worth making.
Who said it's like, but it beats the alternative? It's blah blah blah. It's very messy, but it beats the alternative.
Yeah, but it's one of those things yesterday that shows you what makes our Constitution so strong, and that is it bends, it stretches, it has yet to break, and it did not break yesterday, and even at the tail end, even though the police were terribly every force was terribly late to be on the scene, the way they pushed finally at the end demonstrators peacefully back and secured a big area of the Capitol was something good to see. There was a lot of restraint put in by the police, but
there should have been more arrests, and there are people out on the street right now who took part in criminal acts, and it's extremely disappointing to know we have a president who incited violence so that domestic terrorists would invade our nation's capital.
The reason I'm bringing this up with you now, because, of course, whatever happens nationally like this really does affect us locally. As I said, I'm an old-time progressive. I used to be out demonstrating against the Vietnam War. I once took an American flag and was going to wear it. My mother said no, and she went out and she bought me a red, white, and blue jacket that I could wear, but it wasn't the American flag. But all I'm saying is there's a difference between protests and Americans wanting to speak up and talk about things and give their opinion, and insurrection. And yesterday, for only the second time in its history, the Capitol was breached. The first time it was by the British. This time it was by Americans.
Well, it's a good thing it wasn't a foreign invasion, because they got pretty far.
Oh, they got that totally. And of course, in today's age, what did these people do when they were in there? They took selfies. But I think the picture the thing that will sit with me more than anything was the picture of the four guards in the House chambers that had put up a big piece of, I can't believe the doors don't automatically lock, but they don't. But they had to put a big piece of furniture in front of the doors, and you see four guards with their guns drawn pointing out at Americans trying to break in.
And they broke in, and the selfie the guy posted with, and of course nobody's wearing a mask, so their faces are fully displayed, but the guy with his legs up on Nancy Pelosi's desk.
It's just, I think that as local journalists and local media, we have to represent this to our local population, because I don't know about you guys, but it's something the likes I've never seen before, so.
And nothing happened in Connecticut, which I'm pleased to report. There were smaller-scale uprisings in other states across the country, but Connecticut...
Well, and Maria Horn put a really good statement out about what happened in Hartford yesterday, and I advise everybody to read that. As Americans, we are all completely affected by this, and it should be hard for us to think about anything else today.
All right, well, let's get on to the paper, what's in the paper, and it's interesting... finding what's best for West Twin Lake Health. This week, the Inland Wetlands and Watercourse Commission took their cease and repair order. They lifted that. A lot of things, I think, that came out of that meeting, which we put a videotape up of, by the way, because like most Zoom meetings, when a lot of people want to join in, it just didn't work well. But it's up there now, and it was a good discussion on what's going on at Twin Lakes.
So we've got an ongoing series of stories about a property owner who has property on both sides of West Twin Lake, and he's proposing to take down the causeway, the old railway causeway, that used to cross over the channel so that people back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, could take the train from their regular home in North Canaan or Salisbury and go to the Twin Lakes for the summer for their little, what used to be small cottages, but which for the most part now are quite large properties. And there's a lot of complexity to this, and so we've been running a series of articles starting last month where we're just trying to not take a side but give everybody the opportunity to fully explain what their point of view is. And because the issues are so complex, rather than try to do like a he said in one article, we're giving everybody their own article. So we had our first story was an interview with Jeffrey Keenan, the property owner, and Tim Abbott, who's a very respected land conservation and water protection guy, and has been hired as a consultant by Jeffrey Keenan to work with him to try and make an amendment to the easement on property that Keenan owns. And the easement specifically is for that causeway and says it shouldn't be touched. And, you know, as Tim will persuasively say, there are amendments, especially some of these older easements, are written in an old-fashioned way as they were just learning how to do them. They're often very vague. They're often very confusing. More contemporary easements are written better. So it's not automatically a problem to amend an easement, but there's a lot of concern about the removal of the causeway. And so we have a number of citizens, largely led by John Harney Jr. and his mother, Elise Harney, but also joined by Michael Clemens, who's the head of the Salisbury Planning and Zoning Commission, who opposed this for a variety of reasons, and partly because the Harneys were very close friends with Mary Alice White, the former property owner, and they strongly believe that her intention in that easement was specifically to protect that causeway and make sure it remained in that channel. And so we've had articles with the Harney speaking and with Mary Alice White's children speaking. We've had Jeffrey Keenan speaking. This week we have our reporter Deborah Alexinas, who's been done an extraordinary job on this series, digging into a 2015 study of the lake health and speaking at length to Michael Clemens, who was very measured, I have to say, in my opinion, in explaining what this study said. So in a Zoom presentation that Keenan and Tim Abbott did to members of the Twin Lakes Association, there were a lot of questions that made it clear that the West Twin Lake residents have one set of concerns about their smaller lake. The East Twin Lakes residents have a completely oppositional set of concerns about their own larger lake, where, of course, the water is coming up on the shore, and many people, unfortunately, have built their houses right down close to the water's edge, which is a problem if the water level rises up. So the West Twin Lake people are worried that their water level is dropping and that there's a lot of silt in their lake. The East Twin Lake people want the water level to be lower because the water apparently is coming up on the shore toward their houses. So what Michael is explaining in this article to Deb is this 2015 study and saying it's not the causeway that's creating the silt. It's a dam that's at the top of the West Twin Lake, and that there are other steps that can be taken. If the West Twin Lakes people are choosing to support the removal of the causeway because they think it will improve the water quality in West Twin Lake, he's saying, if you look at the study, that's not actually what's going to happen. So then on Monday night, there was a separate issue, which was this guy Keenan, who has a tendency to do things, to push right up to the edge of the law or perhaps even step over it and say, okay, I broke the law, fine me, or do whatever you want. So he did a lot of clearing on the causeway that he's not allowed to do without permits because it's in a wetland. So he was called up in front of the Inland Wetlands Conservation Commission in December, and because he lives in Florida in winter, he wasn't able to attend, and he asked them to postpone it until January. And so that's a separate issue from the causeway, and Tim Abbott was not in attendance at that meeting. And I think about 40 people attended, which if you ever had 40 people at a budget meeting in Salisbury, that would be a record breaker. So 40 people showing up at an inland wetland meeting is quite a lot. Deb and I watched that. The coverage of that will be in our issue of January 14th because we wanted to really take some time. And as it turns out, it's good we waited because there was a cease and correct order put on Keenan that said you have to stop doing the work you're doing and you have to apply for permits if you're going to do this kind of stuff. So it's quite a long meeting, and the portion that was devoted to the Keenan issue was quite short. It was 18 minutes, and basically what he said was, you need to remove the cease and correct, and then I will apply for permits in future if I do any other work. And there was a brief bit of discussion about it, and there was some concern that this is precedent-setting, that if you let somebody shoot first, ask questions later, that it's problematic. But in the end, they voted. There are a lot of concerns in how that was handled and the vote that was taken, but also the understanding of some of those 40 people that were there was that they were going to be allowed to speak because this was a preliminary hearing. There was supposed to be a follow-up hearing, and they were to be allowed to speak and show evidence saying that they were concerned that this was creating problems in the wetland and also that it broke the easement. And because they chose to remove the cease and correct order at Keenan's direction, these people who had planned to present their information will not have that opportunity in public meeting because the causeway conversation and the amendment is not related to the inland wetlands meeting. It's a conversation between the Nature Conservancy, Tim Abbott, and Jeff Keenan. It doesn't involve public involvement specifically in a hearing situation.
And
is
what's,
that complicated enough?
what's interesting about this whole thing is and the sad thing about it is it casts a negative look at the Nature Conservancy, and they're just caught in the middle of this, and it's going to be interesting to see how it goes on from now on. I think maybe things will slow down, and maybe there'll be more communications between people to understand what's going on. And we did the same thing you did. We spoke to John Harney. We spoke to the landowner. We even spoke to your good buddy Dick Paddock about the history and the environment of the Twin Lakes.
And we actually have an article coming up next week that Rob Bacina wrote, given the history of the railway, which is very interesting.
Yeah.
Documents from Salisbury.
Well, that's why when I listened to you talk about the railroad, that railroad, when that trestle was in there, was the only railroad that connected people from in Boston to Washington, D.C., by the way. And
Central New England.
Yeah.
It's a very beloved railway for rail history buffs. Yeah. And so you could also argue that there is a little piece of history there, but, you know, I don't think it automatically has to go across the water, but that will be debated and discussed. But as we're moving forward, we're going to have the coverage. We're going to have Rob's story on the train history. We're going to have Deb's article on the inland wetlands meeting next week. And then the Nature Conservancy is actually, so far the Nature Conservancy is laid pretty low, and their response to our questions to them has been, we don't have a formal application from Jeffrey Keenan yet to get an amendment to that easement. However, they have been meeting with him. We know they've been meeting with him. They've actually been out to the site. So it's not like they don't know what's happening. So they've indicated that they would be willing to talk to us now and give us some more information on what's going on. The Nature Conservancy has changed a lot over the years, as have all of our land trusts. And so toward the end of the month, just because it's going to take a little longer and there's a lot of people to call and a lot of information to sift, we are going to have a conversation with Tim Abbott, with the Nature Conservancy, we hope, with some of the other really important land trusts in the area, and talk to them about the way that land trusts are changing. So that, for example, what used to be the Wiantanog Land Trust is now sort of becoming an aggregate of smaller land trusts, which is one interesting way to approach it, as long as it in theory gives it more protection and strength, as long as it doesn't get so big that it doesn't monitor the individual trust. But each of our local towns has its own land trust, and those are getting stronger and stronger for the most part, and are being run by professional staffers for the most part now. So that's a positive development, but worth examining. So we'll have that. We're hoping to have it before the end of January.
All right, and taking a look at the rest of the front page, of course, is a look back. The picture selections of the kids with the masks on, also the Black Lives Matter, and also the infamous picture at Great Falls. I mean, we go from hospitals to COVID-19 to elections to drownings in the hot summer. It's a look back at a year that has been a pretty incredible year.
Right, and we're hoping that these incidents that are happening right now are really the tail end of 2020 and not an omen of the beginning of 2021. But normally, historically, for the first issue of the year, because it tends to be very quiet during our two-week hiatus because of Christmas and New Year's, there's not a lot of meetings for the most part. We try to look back. This year there was a lot to look back on, but I'm really happy to report that on our front page this week, frequently at this time of year, there's a major house or building structure fire, and that's our front page story, and I'm very happy to say that we do not have one this week. So we do have, looking back at the Housatonic River, where, you know, and who can blame them? People in the city, really, really hot. And if you ever read the Robert Moses wonderful book, the Caro book about Robert Moses, that was the beginning of a lot of the development of Long Island, was you had people that were trapped in the city, and they would try to get out of the city, and they had no real way to access the ocean. And this, over the last summer, a lot of people were coming up from all over the state of Connecticut and also from as far away as, like, New York City and, you know, the Bronx and Brooklyn to swim in the Housatonic, and they found different ways to get into the water that are not particularly safe and that are not meant for swimming. And you'd see a lot of people who maybe had swum in waterfalls before and felt that they're fairly benign. This happens to be a pretty dangerous waterfall, maybe more than it looks, because of the rocks and the way that the water sort of churns in a circular motion like a washing machine. So we did have a couple of incidents where the, you know, rescue vehicles had to come out and pull somebody out, usually a child. But we did not have somebody die, which is great. Did we have somebody die this summer?
I think
we had a couple of rescues.
In Falls Village, but down in
Kent. Down in Kent we had people pass, yeah.
But still tricky, and towns looking for ways to limit the access to the river, but also, you know, empathetically hoping that people can find a way to come up here and find recreation. And incredibly, still a ton of hiking going on in the last couple weeks. People out, you know, on the fairly icy trails. And again, happy to say that so far we haven't had any calls, but often you do have people hiking and they go off the trail and don't realize how slick it is. And very difficult for the rescue workers to get up and them out, especially if they've gone off the trail. So we'll hope that we don't have any calls like that. But then Deb Alexina's writing about hospitals and nursing homes and COVID and what a year it was with the field hospital. So much has happened, it's hard to believe it all happened in 1 year. We had the election. Patrick Sullivan wrote about the largely Democratic turn that our local towns took, which is not completely unsurprising. And then the schools, you had a ton of people moving up here. Either who already had homes and were up here full-time or people who were moving up here for the first time. And we thought that the enrollment at the schools was going to surge throughout the region, and it didn't, actually. It went up in Cornwall and Salisbury, but it actually went down in some schools and stayed roughly the same at others. And so we have the charts on that and the enrollment numbers.
All right. Also, stories, of course, COVID-19 and affordable housing, big stories and long-running stories that will happen, one in Falls Village and one in Salisbury. And you even have the Little Guild. And once again, as a 501c3, we know how hard and how difficult it is to traverse. And you, as a small media company, know how hard it is to traverse this COVID-19 pandemic. A story done by Lila Hawkins looking back at Little Guild.
Yes. And actually, often when you do these look back on the year, it's just like, huh, well, that was interesting. But this year, this is really like a scorecard. And I would say this is a good issue to keep if you're one of our readers, because all of these stories are ongoing. The Twin Lakes story is ongoing. The COVID story is ongoing. At the schools, you know, it's changing weekly on what their response has to be to infection in the school community. And again, Lisa Carter, who's now the full superintendent for the Region 1 School District, has done a phenomenal job of communicating. I mean, you could almost argue that it's like an incredible amount of information to kind of process, but I'd rather have us getting full reports from her than not knowing. But then the affordable housing thing, very emotional conversations going on in these two different towns, oppositional to the building of housing, and yet, you know, we seem to be moving ahead on those plans, and so that'll be great.
Lots of obituaries with that two-week layover today, the one that popped out to me was James Metz Jr.
Yeah, a big property owner in Sharon, and I believe he also owned one of the filling stations in Millerton, and a resident of Sarasota area in Florida, and owns quite a beautiful property in Sharon, and was known to us, I think, partly because at one point the town was looking at, people often would shortcut through his property, and there was a little bridge there, and I think that they shut the bridge down at one point to keep people from trafficking through. But big loss, a lot of obits for this week, of course, because we have 2 weeks of accumulated obituaries, and I'm disturbed to say that some of the photos that we got, I really felt like, wow, that's my generation. So I guess that's a point that we all reach as we look at the obit pages. You start to go like, wow, not a fluke. There's a lot of people my age that are passing away now.
I feel very good when I don't see my picture there.
That's right.
On a weekly basis.
Marion Smith, of course, who was very beloved in Millerton and had started Thriftique, and then one of our own beloved Dolores Lashever, who was an editor for many, many years here and was a very respected local journalist, and she and her husband, Barney Lashever, who not only worked for, I think he worked for the State Tourism Commission, but also wrote a column for us for many years.
And as you go on, before we get to the editorial page, talk about vaccinations, Eversource, the year they had, car parades, protests, and more.
Oh, my gosh.
It's been one of those years. Well, before we get to Compass, let's talk a little bit about what's on the pages for, of course, the editorial and the letters. And, Janet, your editorial, Hail and Farewell 2020.
Right. You know, something we've all been doing over the past couple of weeks is thinking about how 2020 went and how we'd like to make a transition into 2021. So a big part of what we all experienced together was dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic, and we talk about that and the changes to our society brought about by the killing of George Floyd, the economic downturn related to the coronavirus effect, and so much more. So all of this has affected us, and we talk about our reaction to it. And, you know, now we have an added issue to deal with down in Washington, and in 13 days we'll see how it turns out.
And lots, I mean, your letters go from everything from Mary Alice White to Doug MacArthur talking about his life after retirement and COVID-19 from the Sharon Hospital and gratitude for a community support on a grand level and more. I mean, lots of letters for the start of the year.
Right. I'm especially struck by John Bisbing's letter. He and his wife had contracted COVID-19, and he is expressing such gratitude to the wonderful supportive community in Sharon, and goes through how everyone at the hospital helped them. And, you know, I speak or communicate somehow to everyone who writes a letter, and in speaking with John and his wife, Andrea, it was just striking how they appreciated their community, and they were even talking about how they could help others once they had recovered.
Yeah, this has been an interesting year, both locally and nationally. I like the viewpoint page. We can't abolish the Electoral College, so let's fix it. Memories of Those Who Came Before by Lonnie Carter, and of course Peter Steiner's cartoon.
Yeah. Peter Steiner's cartoon, you know, it's as if he's psychic. But anyway, he always does come up with something that makes us stop and think and understand our world a little bit better.
Well, now we can go on in the last 2 minutes and take a look at, of course, the Compass section.
This is a rare opportunity to talk about the American Museum of Tort Law in Winsted, which I know you've all wanted to go to. And there's some very interesting YouTube interviews going on, and one was Richard Newman, who's the head of the museum, talking to, what's his first name? Richard Fine, who's a Harvard lawyer, Harvard-educated lawyer, who has worked for both liberal and conservative think tanks, very respected, talking about presidential pardons, of course, which is something that's been on everybody's minds, and the legitimacy of the election. And I love this quote I keep using again, which it says, Joe Biden is probably the most legitimate president in history because this election has been so heavily scrutinized. But a very interesting conversation, and they'll be talking about more topics in the weeks ahead, so we give you information on how to find that. So nice to see the Gingerbread Festival in Kent. Like, unbelievable the work that they do. The cookies are so happy. So we have something on that. There was a talk in Sharon a couple weeks ago by Eve Kahn talking about Alethea Platt, who is a Sharon artist and an advocate for women's rights. We have an article by Leela Hawken on that. Upcoming at D.M. Hunt Library, a talk on classical music. And then, in case this hasn't been a hard enough week for you, we have David Pogue, who's a very entertaining and amusing YouTube presenter and TED Talk presenter, and talks about, you know, like top 10 ways to protect yourself from this or that. So his new book is all about climate change and what really bad shape the planet is in. And he's kind of saying, well, let's assume that things are going to assume the worst, and here's some ways you can protect yourself. So he'll be doing a talk for the Salisbury Forum on that. Not a lot of activities going on at this moment, starting up again as we move into January, but I went online and did something I often do, which is to look for museum tours, because, you know, if you can't travel anyway, you might as well travel by YouTube, and found a really interesting tour of the Grand Palais in Paris on Google Arts and Culture, so we talk about that. And then we had some extra space, and I had just made marmalade, so we talk about how to make marmalade. And I'll tell you, this marmalade is so good, and it's the time of year to make it because there's incredible fruit at the stores right now.
All right. Well, I want you two to have a good week, and we will check with you once again next week. The stories that are on the pages, but not only the Lakeville News, Lakeville Journal, but the Millerton News, and of course, tricornernews.com is your website. So we'll speak to you guys next week.
Yes, thank you so much.
That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal here on Robinhood Radio. And once again, they're available at tricornernews.com.